issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning and welcome to Education Matters. My name is Mike Keough. I'm one of the rotating hosts. And what we're doing this morning is a candidates forum for the Kenosha Unified School Board election. February 16th is the primary election. And we're doing a forum on that. This will be a forum, not a debate. And why don't we begin by each of you giving us sort of a concise campaign biography, and then I'll say a few more things about what we're going to do here and ask you a few general questions.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Stevens. I'm on the school board currently. I'm going into my ninth year, my third term. I'd like to become reelected to the school board. I look at all the progress we have made over the years, and through many struggles we've made it through. We have a lot of change that is coming through based on technology, the advancement of areas and jobs that we need to get training so that we can make sure we bring our children up to speed to where they need to be so they can contribute in the workforce moving forward. We've made a lot of progress. I look forward to continue building on that progress, specifically through supporting the teachers in the classroom who are the number one person that can impact a child in education, the first and foremost. So I think it's really important that we continue to do a good job supporting. We've got more opportunity now in education than we ever have, and I want to continue building on that. Thanks for having me here, and I want to say thank you to all our former school board members and board members that are currently serving, as well as these two nice gentlemen that are running also here for this election. It's a big commitment, and it's one of the best things you can do in your community to support children and families.
Okay, David.
Good morning, Kenosha. My name is David Arrington. I've been a resident of Kenosha County for 25 years. I am currently serving on the Kenosha County supervisory capacity. I serve on human services and the judiciary law as a county board supervisor. This morning I'm here as a candidate for Kenosha Unified Schools. I currently work in Kenosha Unified Schools. I've worked there for the past 12 years. And I've worked with students extensively, thousands of students extensively, all over this city. My main concern is to make sure that we continue to push the mark forward for these students in this city. What I'm seeing is not enough opportunities for students to reach their potential value in the things that they seek out for. And I want to be a part of the opportunity to move this thing forward in Kenosha Unified Schools. I'd like to thank you all for having me here this morning, for Lance and Rebecca to be here. Good luck to them, and look forward to speaking to you further. Thank you.
Okay, and Lance.
My name is Lance Gordon, and I'm a 19-year-old who graduated high school in 2014. I'm a lifelong Kenosha resident. I was actually born at the old St. Cats down by the lake. I'm a former Mayor's Youth Commission member, a Kenosha Dream Playground Project volunteer, as well as a 3-year volunteer on the Dream Team. I currently go to school at Gateway Technical College in the nursing program. I'm a Dean's List student, and my message and platform is rather simple, and it can be summed up in two words: students first. I believe that all decisions that are made by the school board should benefit the students and not be to the benefit of an individual, a group, or a political party. Frequently, I get asked the question, what do you plan to bring to the board? And it's something that you'll see in a lot of my campaign literature and on many of my signs, and that's a fresh perspective. I come in not having an agenda, but here as an advocate for the students and the teachers. With every decision that I make, I plan to do my due diligence and listen. And I think that's a large proponent to board a good board member. I'd like to say thank you to WGTD for having me today, as well as good luck to my opponents. And again, thank you to Mike for having me on the show today.
Okay, and thank you. And we should say that there are six persons who are running for two positions. Rebecca is running to hold on to her seat. There are three people who are not here today. Todd Jacobs and Ismael Torres did not respond to our invitations, so I don't know what their circumstances were. Tony Garcia was planning on being here, but he had a family emergency that required him to go up to a hospital in Milwaukee this morning. He called me quite early and said he was leaving, and so he's not here. Perhaps in the case of the others, it's shortness of time. There's not a lot of time between the announcement of the candidates from the nominating petitions and the date of a primary election. And so things are kind of compressed in terms of time. We considered not holding a forum for primary purposes. The newspapers don't do it. But we decided to do it because one of the things that happens with primary elections is that, first of all, turnout is low because people don't know the candidates. That's one of the reasons. There are others as well. And secondly, when they get to the polls, they generally don't know a lot about who they're voting for. And actually, at a primary election, you are really electing the persons who are going to be on the school board or fill whatever office. So we felt it was important from informational purposes. And I'm not disappointed that we have you three here today, because it'll be able to provide us with a more conversational environment. I'd like to begin by asking each of you the same general question and ask you to respond to it, because this is a forum, not a debate. So we want to give you an opportunity to present your case. And why don't we start with you, David, and just I'd just like to ask you and the others, what do you feel is the greatest need of Kenosha Unified School District, and what would you do during your, say, your first year in office to try and deal with that?
I have looked at this situation from several different sides. As a matter of fact, people need to understand that I am currently working in Kenosha Unified Schools. I am among the students. I've been among the students for the past 12 years. And my biggest concern is that we seem to have a disconnection with the community and the communication and the accountability of parents working together to have better disciplinary atmospheres in the learning environment. We have students that have disciplinary issues here in Kenosha Unified Schools, and I believe that at times teachers as well as administrators are estranged because they're not able to really pinpoint and issue out a method of discipline that can prevent this student from disrupting the learning environment. And where I'm seeing it the most is at the middle school level, 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade. Those are my highest concentrations where I've worked in Kenosha Unified Schools. We have middle school students for some reason that feel like that the rules don't apply to them, that they can break the rules and that can be given multiple chances to break those rules, because on the back end, the administration and the teachers' hands are tied. Students have been removed from the classrooms. They've been disciplinary issues in the past, but those students are sent right back to the classrooms, and that's ineffective. And what I would do in my first term is attempt to get all the parents in Kenosha involved in a more comprehensive plan that prevents their child or students that are having these disciplinary issues from continuing to have these disciplinary issues in the classroom. I believe that we really honestly need to educate and communicate extensively to the parents that need to hear this about their children, not only because it affects the other students in the classroom, but I don't believe we're being fair to the student that's continuing to exhibit this behavior out there in the real world. When they're beyond the doors of Kenosha Unified School District, the Kenosha Police Department is not going to give you a timeout or a think about it. And that's one of the things that I really want to, because these students, I believe all students have the ability to learn. Every last one of them have the ability to learn. And what we need to also do with students that are having behavior and disciplinary problems is we need to reinforce in the schools that they're there to learn, and that we need to have steps in place that send a more serious message to them and their parents that we're not going to tolerate how you behave in school. If you behave this way, then there's going to be a more sterner punishment and or disciplinary action against you, so that not only we're fair to the students that are there to learn, but that we awaken the potential in this student that for some reason is disconnecting from the learning environment because they would choose to be a behavior problem than to buckle down and become a part of the positive learning environment in the classroom. So that's pretty much what I would do. I would definitely go after making sure that we insert and add, because there are steps in place, but I believe we need to add more to our disciplinary policies in KUSD. It only helps the children. Thank you.
Okay. Lance?
Sure.
Same question.
As far as my first year in office, what I plan to do would continue through my entire term, and that's strengthening a connection between our students, our families, and our school. And I quote, the KUSD mission statement reads, prepare all learners to succeed in life by providing exceptional opportunities that inspire achievement and excellence. And by strengthening this connection, it's exactly what we're doing. Having a two-way street between our parents and our teachers not only will provide our teachers with better insight as to what's going on at home and maybe give them insight on how they can adapt their learning strategies to a particular learner or their classroom, but it also gives the parents a sense of more so comfort that their kids are being taken care of and getting what they need in the classroom. One thing that many people may not realize is that outside of summer, more than half of our kids' life is spent with our teachers. So our teachers are not only giving them knowledge, but they're also assisting the upbringing of our children. So every set of parents has a different way that we would like to bring up our children. But if the teachers don't know how particular parents want their children to be brought up, they're just kind of shooting in the dark. So with a stronger connection between school and family, it's not going to be just a shot in the dark. They're going to know, and they're going to be an advocate for our parents inside the classroom when they're not even there. Ways we can do this are very simple, and it's not so much changing things that we don't have. It's just encouraging. Things such as attendance to parent-teacher conferences, maybe having movie and game nights. And one thing about it is it shouldn't just stop in June when the kids get out of school. It should continue year-round, because the relationships that our students create in the classroom don't end in June and start back up in September. They continue year-round. Kids play with each other all summer long, all winter long. And that's the type of atmosphere we need to have in our schools, is that no matter if they're in session, out of session, the same rules apply, and holding our kids accountable. Thank you.
Okay, Rebecca.
Yeah, So obviously I'm going into my ninth year, so it won't be my first year. But discipline is always a concern in the schools. I think that we have to get a little more creative about our approaches to it. I agree with Mr. Arrington here and Lance both that there's got to be a strong connection between the community at large and the schools and the parents in the schools. I worked as a parent network liaison for many years back at McKinley Elementary, and I can't believe it's almost 20 years ago. And we had those same issues then as we do now. But what we found when we created that bond and we opened up and we had these chat and chews through Pat Demos, her work in the community and connecting parents with parents and holding those opportunities to educate parents about how important it is. So when we brought on the everyday math program, for instance, at the elementary schools, we would have a session and we'd invite people in. They'd sit down, all the parents, the kids, they'd have a meal, and afterwards we'd have a little education session with them. This is very, very powerful, community by community, but we have to take it a step larger now. We know at middle school that peer group is the number one influence, so we need to sit down and look at how do we influence them to make better choices. I go back to, I used to be a CABA mentor as well. Mike, I know you're a foster grandparent. I hear the tremendous work you do over at Bullen every single day, and you inspire not only the kids but staff members. You're a community member. You're a foster grandparent. I work for a mentoring program. We bring mentors into the schools. I was so excited when I started my new job. We were already K through 8. I extended it through high school. I've got 58 different mentors in 22 schools. The things that we can do together, though, another good book that I just read recently from the Kenosha Business Alliance through CABA brought in a speaker, Jamie Vollmer. He made it a point to say, look, it's easy to sit back and complain about this is wrong in a school, that's wrong in a school, and the teachers aren't doing enough and everything. We've got all these social issues that feed into the schools now more than ever because families are more disjointed. We're not as connected. People live all over the world. We don't have the grandmas and grandpas there sometimes. That generation that's helped continue to support our students in a positive way. I encourage us to reach out in our business communities, our social services, our police, every area. Bring a committee together. Sit down. We're doing that through Strive. That's a good start. But we need to expand that committee so we have all different people from all different walks of life because it's our community as a whole that will embrace and change the things that aren't working right. As far as discipline goes, we need to have a zero tolerance as far as if you're in a classroom and you're interrupting, we need to get more help for you. That doesn't mean that it's an excuse. It means that child is having an issue. How do we help them? One of the problems I feel that has happened over the last few years that kind of pushed us back a bit through Act 10 was the funding was cut to public education. We know special education teachers, counselors, that support staff, we lost a lot of that staff that can make that impact with that student one-on-one. So there's many areas we need to reach out to, and we need to bring people into the school so they can see. Also, the way that we educate students, there are students that need to have a different type of environment to learn the best. They're not going to do as well sitting in a classroom. They need more movement. They need to be able to stand up and move around. I'd say something like a standing desk where you can stand up and work. For me, as an adult, that works. Sometimes that helps get away from the fact that I can't sit here all day. I've got all this energy. Our students need to have more gym time. They need to have more exercise, outdoor time. That cuts down on discipline issues. So there's a lot of really easy, simple things we can do. But then the more complex things, I think we need to bring more people from the community to the table. We need to get people in there. Into the schools, visiting to the schools, so they see the work that you guys do every single day in the schools and how important it is and how much support our educators need in the buildings.
So it sounds like you're all talking about the idea of making the schools a more learnable environment by
absolutely
by making them healthier environments. I would like to ask you, David, to following up on that, because you're a substitute teacher and you get around to all of the schools. And I know when I was a substitute teacher, I saw lots of variations in the way things were handled from one school to the other. Do you think there's more of a role for the central office to be creating a uniform environment for discipline and for community outreach and the sort of things we've been talking about? Or maybe you don't see the same differences occurring.
Here's something that the public needs to know. It's very important that they understand. And I'm not slam dunking. My father served on the school board. He was one of the first African-American men, if not the first African-American man in Kenosha to serve on the school board. And I believe that the school board is doing all that they can. One of the reasons why I want to come to the school board and be elected to the school board is because I bring specific information. I bring recent information in the past 12 years. I've seen it. I've been there. I've subbed for these teachers. I've been to every middle school. I've been to every high school. I've seen it. And the central office, I believe they already understand, but what I'm sharing with the public this morning is that one thing that I'm going to bring up, and I'm still doing an investigation on this right now, you all need to understand that in the middle school, and the reason why I'm emphasizing on middle school, because I'm a metaphoric minister, middle school is this bridge. If you have the elementary school on your left, the bridge is the middle school in the middle, and then the students move on to high school. One major problem, and I'm going to continue to research this to see what I can do if elected, we are sending middle school children to high school that sometimes achieve a 0.0 grade point average. And I've looked into the whole issue of No Child Left Behind and all these other different things, but I'm asking my constituents who will vote for me to listen to what we're saying. We're going on a hope and a prayer. And I love, Rebecca, everything that you talked about. The mentors are doing all that they can. And administration and teachers are doing all that they can. But I bring this subject up. You've got a middle school eighth grader. I need you to imagine this. They've got straight F's in school. They haven't demonstrated that they're able to even read at the required grade level that they need to read at. We're sending these students to high school. One thing that I want to work with the board on, if elected, is how can we get our hands around a potential smaller issue at the middle school level before it becomes a bigger issue at the high school level? You've got a student who can't read in middle school. We're sending that kid to high school. High school is the 4 years of preparation to adulthood. I'm not going to say college because all students, and I'll save that if that question's on the table, because I do have some things to talk about if we have time this morning. All students are not going to college, and I have ideas for that for Kenosha Unified School District also. But that's probably my biggest issue as I've looked at this in the past 12 years. I've watched a cultural conditioning go on. It's not the teacher's fault, not the administration's fault. It's all of our fault. It's the community. It's all of our fault that we're allowing them to go to high school unequipped. It's like they're just going to turn it on. And I think we're not being fair to them down at that middle school level academically. I don't think we're being fair to them at the elementary school level. We have to get to a point where we say that we're going to be the adults and we're going to stand up and say, no, you can't continue to go down this path, and we're going to hold you accountable. Every child should read. I've said this before, and I encompass it not racially specific. A child that cannot read is enslaved to limited opportunities in America. They can't read, and we need to take a look at this as a board, and I will definitely work with whomever is elected and whomever is on the Kenosha Unified School Board to take a look at this. Do we hold them back? Do we send them to summer programs and et cetera? We need to take a look at this. So that's my big issue. That's the bigger issue that goes into the discipline, you know, because the students who had discipline problems and academic problems, it stems over into the high school, and now we're sending them off to Hillcrest, Reuther. They're still not achieving, so we need to take a look at that. Thank you.
Okay. It sounds like, if I'm hearing you correctly, that one of the things that you're saying is that the schools need to do more than provide academic instruction. They need to also do what in the parochial schools they refer to as formation. In other words, helping them develop self-esteem.
Absolutely.
Help them develop self-discipline that they will need later on. I'd like to ask one of the other. Rebecca, would you
sure.
like to respond to that?
Yeah. Well, I totally agree. But the way our system is set up is very frustrating, and it is since No Child Left Behind came into place. It kind of really created a lot of issues that we are not equipped to, nor sometimes will we ever be equipped to deal with alone as a school with the social issues. Again, it goes back to that whole community piece coming in, and what are we doing as a community when we know a child is failing at elementary level? We got to nip it in the bud early. We can do this. We can work with small reading groups. I've got mentors that work one-on-one with reading. I just had a little boy the other day from a mentor that signed on, and he thought he just was really nervous about what he was doing. He worked with this young man since September. His skill, his scores and his reading tests have gone from 58% to two weeks in a row, 100%. So that one-on-one time, those opportunities to support students right where they're at. We have no control over what our children are born into. And believe you me, I did the home visits. I've been, and that was 20 years ago, and it's gotten worse. Children need to know that their community cares about them, that there's opportunity, and we don't all learn the same either. And that's part of the problem we have, too. We need to offer different types of people, different types of learning environments. This is old science. It's been researched in depth. And when you have a child that's bored or doesn't learn in a certain way, we need to work to differentiate. We've got a lot of that going. I think one of the positive things with technology is that we can test, we can do those MAPS tests. That gives us an opportunity to get a snapshot of right where they're at, right at that moment. Now, the other piece that's outside of our realm of control, and we know we're getting better results with things like MAPS and those things, so we can make a difference that way, because you can come up with a plan and say, look, I identify this child is struggling in this area. What can we do as a team to support that child? The larger community piece, though, is the poverty issue. 11,000, half of our students and Kenosha Unified are living in poverty. And I don't just mean financial poverty. I mean, that's the measure for that. But there's all different types of poverty. And if your family doesn't value education, doesn't value that, that to me is a type of poverty. And so how do we reach out as a community and bring our churches in together, bring our businesses in together and say, we're going to look at this as a whole community. We're not going to point fingers, because this is a big job, and we all need to be on board working together with it. We can do this. We are doing it already. We just need to figure out ways to expand that, and we need to listen to people like Mike, too, who's been in the trenches as a foster grandparent at that middle school level, and he sees some kids that are really struggling, but he's worked and had a lot of good accomplishments. Now, when you go back to the substitute teachers, and I would hear your frustration loud and clear, because I know several other people that are substitute teachers, and I've talked to Mike in the past as well, there's got to be some way we can get better organized from the top down, so that when our substitute teachers walk into a building, there is a place that they can go where they feel like, okay, there's a folder there for me. There's, you know, there's a plan there for me for the day. there's something that they can do to walk in that classroom and say, okay, this is what we're doing for the day. I had a substitute teacher, a good friend of mine, that just said, you know, she had a special education student that just could not stay in that classroom. He was having a meltdown. Usually you can pick up the phone and you can call and you'll get somebody on the other end of the phone. It went to voicemail. That concerns me greatly. How as you as a substitute teacher, my friends as substitute teachers, I'm concerned. Because what if that's a safety issue and they're really out of control, but there's nobody there on the other end of the phone for an administrator or a dean of students or somebody to step in, because that child needs to be out of the room for that time. And so those kinds of things we need to get more uniform on. But I really feel, now I'm glad you're here as a substitute teacher saying this, because we need to hear that as board members. It needs to come to us so we can say, what are we doing to address this? We're only as strong as the weakest link in our school system, and we have to create a better environment where teachers, substitute teachers, support staff feel comfortable with sharing their concerns, and our employee survey shows that there's real issues out there that we need to get better at dealing with. Awareness is the first step. Sometimes people say, well, why do you bring up that problem? Because it's just like any other thing. If you don't agree and say, yes, we do have a problem, how do we solve a problem if we just ignore it? One of the good things that I began with the last time I ran was the anti-bullying. Hmm. And Mike was on that committee with me as well. We've made some really good progress based on students from 8th to 12th grade doing surveys for that high-risk behavior survey. They're saying there are less incidents of bullying because they understand, first of all, what bullying is. There's a definition. We took a lot of time on that policy. Now, I'm not saying there's not still room for improvement, because I always believe there's room for improvement, but we're doing things like that. But it took a lot to get the administration to say, yes, we do have an issue. And then we brought the whole community. We had people from all walks of life, business, social services, substitute teachers. That's where our power lies as a community, and I think we need to work from that point moving forward and creating more opportunities for that.
Yeah, I see a lot of improvement at Bullen, but I also see that it's a process that's evolving, rather.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something that can be done with schools sharing their successes. But Lance, yep. You've been taking notes
I have, and the reason I've been taking so many notes is that a lot of great points have been made. Mike mentioned about parochial schools, and David agreed about the formation of self-discipline. And my background is I've gone to parochial school my whole life. Now, when you're 5, you don't really have much of a choice in where you want to go to school. Your parents kind of say, hey, you're going to school, and they drop you off, and they pick you up. So that's the decision my parents made. But with that background, I've had experience in that formation and that self-discipline. I know what it takes. I've been a part of it before. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I've never done anything wrong in my entire school year career. I'm sure everyone's been sent to the principal's office once or twice. But with that being said, I also have great experience with the integration of technology into our school setting. I dealt with laptops for my 4 years of high school, had all e-books, and I can tell you some great advantages to it, but I'm also not going to sit here and say that it's all great, because there are some disadvantages. Some advantages include there were many nights where I set up a one-on-one with my teacher from my home. I was able to video chat or voice chat with a teacher and gain the help that I needed, get that extra help that to propel me to either catch up with the class or just for my own knowledge. And again, it all ties into learning doesn't stop when you exit the doors of a school. Learning continues at home. Learning continues during the summer. And this, in technology, provides that gateway for that. I can tell you a few disadvantages would be, as Rebecca stated, half of our students are in poverty. With that being said, maybe not all families will be able to afford it, or maybe not all families have access to wireless internet. But I can tell you from many experiences, if there's a will, and when I say will, I mean by our greater community for integration for technology in our schools, we will find a way. I will not stop until we find that way, if that's what our community decides the direction we want to take. But again, you know, technology, it's very on the up and up. It's not proven. It's not, oh, this is going to work. Oh, this is not going to work. But technology also provides a access for all three different types of learners: our kinesthetic learners, which are our hands-on learners; our auditory learners, which are listening; and our visual learners, who need to see a diagram. Things like tablets allow students to draw on the screen and take notes by hand while still having e-copy, which is great, because now on a Sunday morning when you're out and about with your family, you know, maybe your mom's getting an oil change and you're stuck waiting in the waiting room for half an hour, you can sit and study. You can make use of time outside of the classroom and outside of your home setting. So that's one thing that I definitely would like to bring to our school system. And with that being said, it may not work on all levels. It may not be right for K through 8. But if it's right for, you know, 9 through 12, then that's where we need to do it. But we'd have to do our due diligence and our research as to where it's right, and not try and force something because we as a board decide that it's right. We need to listen to the public and listen to our community and listen to our students, and especially listen to our teachers who are there hands-on, like David, and ask the questions, hey, we're going to try this. Let us know what you think. Like Rebecca said, we have surveys, and surveys are very, very valuable. They provide us with information from the classroom, because unfortunately, I'm sure as Rebecca can attest, the 7 board members only have so much exposure to that classroom. Other than meeting every other Tuesday night and hearing what they hear from a couple of their friends who are teachers and the superintendent, that's about all the feedback they get. But again, with technology now, not only are our students open up to communication with our teachers and our principals, they can also be in communication with us as board members. If they see a problem and they've gone to the principal or they've gone to their teacher and it's not being addressed, it allows for them to come to us and say, hey, this is my problem. Can you give me some feedback from the top of the chain? And it allows us to lead by example and really make a connection from the top of the chain all the way down to the bottom of the chain.
Okay, this is probably a good time for me to say that Education Matters is not just a radio program on WGTD. We also have a Facebook site. I work very hard on it, and some other people work on it as well. If you're interested in any of the things we're talking about and you want to get involved, you can get involved on our Facebook site, and I will post some information on there as well as to other places, email addresses and so on, telephone numbers at the ESC, and other programs that you can get involved with. We have about 5 minutes left. By the way, the address of the Facebook site is WGTD:Education Matters. If you just put Education Matters, you'll get taken all over the United States. We have about 5 minutes left, and I wonder if each of you would like to divide that up and give some closing comments here.
Sure. I would be happy to go first. As I said earlier in my opening statement, I plan to bring a fresh perspective to the board. I have experience in the classroom. That's why my age is such a benefit. From the campaign that I've done, a lot of people are like, oh, you're 19, you don't have experience. And it's not that I don't have experience, it's that I have different experiences. I'm able to connect with our learners because I've been in that situation. With that being said, integration of technology may be a plus for our school system, but that's something that we can't force and say this is what we're going to do. It's something we have to try, and it's all about trial and error. A key part of that is listening to our teachers and our families. Learning doesn't just stop when we exit the building, as I said earlier. So we really do need to listen to our educators and our families and strengthen that connection between our schools and our families.
Okay, David?
I want Kenosha County citizens to consider. Again, my name is David Arrington. I have served you as a Kenosha County Board Supervisor for 8 years. My areas of expertise are in human services and judiciary law. And I say these things because these things go hand in hand. Also working for 12 years in Kenosha Unified Schools as a substitute teacher. I used to wonder why, when it was difficult for me to find a different job, why God left me in a position as a substitute teacher. And the reason why is because now I'm coming to you running for school board. I've seen three cycles of students come through this school district. And I'm not here to blame anyone. I'm here to encourage us as a community and us as parents to get further involved in the educational process of these students in Kenosha, period, point blank. I thank you for your time. If there's any questions for me, you can reach me on Facebook and inbox me, and I'll be sure to answer your questions. Thank you. God bless.
And Rebecca, about 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for supporting me in the past, and I hope that you'll continue to support me for my fourth run as a school board member. I have made a lot of progress. I have worked hard for a strong curriculum audit, which we hadn't had across the district, the anti-bullying, and also correcting problems when things were implemented and were not properly followed through on, and we didn't have the proper training for staff. So I'm always interested in hearing what is going on in the district. I visit schools on a regular basis with my job, because I do visit with my mentors. So I'm in schools and in 22 of them at least once or twice a year. So I think that's a benefit as well. I think that the work we do is a very, very tough job. And I think it takes some years of knowledge and experience and looking at what's worked and what doesn't work. The thing that does work is when you bring a community together around a common cause, and that common cause is that our students, my children are grown now, I have grandchildren coming up, and I want to make our community a better place for all of us to live. But it takes input from everyone, and it takes time, and it takes energy. So at the time when I was board president back a couple years ago, we had three big committees going on all at the same time. And you have to be there, and you have to be involved, and you have to be ready to say, I'm here. You forfeit a lot of other things in your life to be able to serve. But I enjoy the service, and I thank you, and I hope you'll vote for me, Rebecca Stevens, again on February 16th.
Okay, well, I have to end it there. I want to thank Rebecca Stevens and Lance Gordon and David Arrington for being my guests today. Tony Garcia is another candidate for the office, and he was unable to be here because of a family medical emergency. And there are two other candidates running, Todd Jacobs and Ismael Torres. Thank you for listening, and we'll wrap it up there.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is now available on your smartphone. To hear jazz, big band, and blues, go to the App Store and download the free app. HD2 is still available at WGTD.org or over the air in the Kenosha Racine area via HD Radio.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, a day-long college financial aid and scholarship resource fair geared for minority and low to moderate income students and their parents will be held Saturday at Parkside. It's free and lunch is included. Call 654-2412.
Jazz on WGTD HD2. Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more, airing right now on HD2. For more information, go to WGTD.org or dial 564-3030.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant.